Hey guys, welcome to the next episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill and S2H. Today we're going to talk about the effects of caffeine on your off season. We're going to talk about metformin and berberine dosing, improving separation in your legs, deciding what you need to do on contest morning, plus some cat talk and a whole lot more with Skip Hill, S2H. Show is brought to you by True Nutrition. Check out our code ADVICES. Let's get this thing rolling.
ADVICES Radio Network.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Scott McNally with me, as always, is Skip Hill and S2H. S2H, your boss said you could do video, kind of. We can kind of see you.
She told me it was okay.
Told you it was all right?
Yeah, she said I could. Right
on. Well, we got S2H live in the flesh. What is up, yeah. Skip? How you doing, man?
You know, people just, they aren't even hearing a word you're saying. They're just looking at them like, oh, they're leaning into their screen right now going, oh, that's not, that's not what I thought he'd look like.
Yeah. No.
Is that really him? Like,
did you know Brittany, you weren't on that day, Skip, yet. When we had Brittany on the show.
Yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't on yet. And S2H had his whole screen lit up. And like you could see him, he didn't have the glasses on, and Brittany's face just like dropped. She's like, and then Scott went away real quick, and then she was like, she looked at me, she's like, I saw him. I saw his 2H.
It's like seeing the Easter Bunny or something. You're like, whoa, did I just see what I think I just saw?
Exactly.
Yeah, I missed it.
Dude, we got some good feedback from last episode. You know, guys, we do this show every other week. You know, on opposite weeks, we have an episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. Last week, we didn't have S2H, but we had Skip Hill. We were coming from Skip's mom's kitchen in Michigan. Unfortunately, you know, untimely situation with his family. Hope everything's going good or better. Hope everything with the wife is going better. Mm-hmm. And hope you've been able to get a few more meals in. Last time we talked, you were like, I only ate like, you know, two meals today and I haven't drank any water. So how you feeling now?
Well, I'm back on track and everything's kind of back into a rhythm. You know, it's hard enough dealing with, it's bad enough dealing with stressful stuff that is crazy anyway, but then you have no outlet or your regular outlet of training and that sort of thing. So basically everything is out of whack. There's nothing to really kind of, you know, you're not in your fucking house. You're in somebody else's house.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, you're comfortable with the people, it's still not your place. The routine isn't there. You're not training. Your meals are crap. And emotionally, you're exhausted. It was, you know, not a fun time for sure. Now, getting back here and getting back into routine and rhythm and stuff, things have been better. But I know I'm doing much better. My wife's doing better, too. But it's, you know, it's a process. So the training's great. I mean, I'm back in the gym and you know, I'm caught up with business. The other thing is when I'm out of town, I stress about business because it's easy to keep up on client work, but you know, I can't write. I can't, you know, doing a podcast is, I don't want to say it's second rate. It can get done, but it's not the same structure. Familiarity. I just want everything to be the same. And, you know, I'm not working at the same time. And I've had a few clients, you know, who are coming close to shows and being out of town is difficult because signal is scattered and you're responding from your phone and you can't be on a computer very often. It's just a difficult thing. So even just to get caught up when I got back with work and stuff took a huge stress off me as well.
Hey, for people, because like, you know, last episode, we had said like, hey guys, this is almost like a reintroduction to the show because we have all these new people now that are checking the program out on YouTube. You know, basically we started the new YouTube page. Everybody who's watching this now, you're at Think Big Bodybuilding Media. You know, this is a network of many podcasts. We've done this for years through audio. And, you know, everybody who listens to the shows, we're on like episode 70-something now. We've all known who you guys are, you know. And we got to reintroduce you last week, Skip. How do we introduce Scott to the new audience? First of all, should we introduce Scott to the new audience?
Well, I think we already have, in the sense that, like I said, a lot of people right now are just kind of tripped out. New listeners may not know. They're like, I don't know who's the guy in the glasses. Yeah. It's not that sunny in that room. I don't know what he's doing with the glasses on, North Face hat, which North Face is really not a very Texas-y thing. That's like a that's like a granola Colorado.
Vote liberal, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Yeah. North Face, and what's the one that starts
Patagonia.
There you go, Patagonia. Yeah. Well, I couldn't come up with that. I spent 21 years in Colorado. I'm kind of disappointed.
You're detached from it now. You're in Florida.
Enigmatic. There you go. That covers it.
Well, what kind of contribution does he have to a bodybuilding, steroid supplement, fitness podcast? That's what
nothing, actually.
He's just here strictly for entertainment value.
Just strictly for entertainment. Fair enough.
Now, he knows the compound world, in my opinion, backwards and forwards.
Okay.
So when it comes time for, I always laugh and say, when the questions get really hard and they get really deep, I just hesitate to answer and then hoping he jumps in.
Mm. There you go.
Yeah.
Save that one for Scott.
He can give the more complicated, answer when it comes to things like that. Plus, he's a peptide guy, and I fucking hate him. Mm. Other than melanotan and IGF.
Scott, you're one of the first people that I know that suggested the every other day growth hormone protocol. I feel like everybody's doing that now.
Trendsetter.
That's it. That's it.
Man of
trendsetter.
Cameras on him.
So anyway, guys, Skip, I was looking, we have a freaking ton of questions today. We had some good feedback, good turnout, man, over at the Advices Radio Facebook group that we started here. We used to take questions over at the forum at advicesradio.com, but we got rid of the forum because like people don't post in forum so much anymore. But the group is on fire, man. We got a ton of questions over there. You wanted to start a contest. I don't know how good this contest is going to work out. I was thinking about it. I talk to you every other week now for like 3 years, and I don't know if I could name all your cats. But what it would tell us, what's a contest? Let's run this thing legit, and let's see if we can actually get somebody to win. And if they win, you are donating a 5-pound bag of Team Skip Blend Protein from our sponsor, True Nutrition. And I will invite you on this freaking program. You'll get 5 minutes of celebrity fame and get to hang out with Skip and S2H. Legit, you'll get that.
And we have to talk about cats because that's what S2H wants to do for that 5 minutes. So,
yes.
You know, I wondered the same thing when it came to the names, because you'd have to almost follow. You'd have to be friends. And I'm going to fuck this up because now it's going to backfire on me, but I have two Facebook accounts, and you'd almost have to be on my personal account to know those things, because I post a lot of family, and that's why people sometimes, hit me, they'll see, he's got another account. So they hit me on my personal, and that's primarily just family and close friends and stuff like that. So a lot of pictures of family and kids and kind of things that I don't put out there, and cats, exactly, things that I don't put out there as much with. You know, with the bodybuilding industry and stuff, I try to separate them, I guess. So you would, people who are on my personal page would probably know the names, but I don't know if anybody's going to know all those names either. So it'll be interesting to see if I might be able to keep my 5 pounds of protein. Let's put it that way.
Right.
I might save on shipping charges. I don't know.
Well, if you guys can figure it out, if you want to place a guess, if you want to go back and like do your homework and stalk Skip on social media and then place a guess, we decided what was the best bet. Reach out to me. You can find me over on Facebook, Scott McNally, or you can go to Scott McNally 1 on Instagram. Drop me a private message. That way you don't share your answers with others.
Right. And
I'm suspecting, man, I put it this way. I will be floored if somebody gets all your cat's names right. Right. But I do want to, at the same time, I do want to see it. Like, I'm rooting for this to happen.
Well,
I know them all.
There's 5 cats, 5 pounds of protein. If you only get 2 cats right, you only get 2 pounds of protein.
I think we all know one.
It's a pretty safe bet they'll at least get one right. Probably 2, but from there it could go downhill quickly. Maybe it's whoever gets more, because they may not get all 5. So there's that.
Okay. I don't know.
So we'll see how it goes, but I'll be interested to see if anybody knows. And I'm gonna tell you, if you're listening and you're like, I was thinking about this earlier, I'm like, if it's Alex and he wants an extra 5-pound bag of Team Skip protein, my buddy Alex, who helped to take care of my cats while I was gone.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm going to have to disqualify you. That wouldn't be very fair, but he's probably the only one who might know that.
Yeah.
Other than S2H, but that's only because he's had them lined up in his scopes before.
Well, there's Zuri. There's
Well, don't rattle him off, douchebag. Yeah, okay.
All right, and we have to thank Austin Stout for this, because he jokingly said in our question thread, the name of Skip's cats and what he enjoys most about them, signed fellow cat enthusiast. Dude, I got to tell you, Austin's been he's been working hard. I don't know if you've seen his posts. We were talking about Austin Stout on social media. He's been posting some crazy lifts. I don't know what he had on the bar, man, but I was watching him squat. It might have been 315. I can't remember for sure, though. But, I mean, he was just going squat rep after rep after rep. And when he couldn't go anymore, he took, like, a couple breaths, and then he got another rep. And when he couldn't go anymore, just kept freaking going, man. He blasted that shit out. I love seeing training like that. I really do, man.
Well, and I think it's kind of the way he's got that barn set up is kind of appealing. It's kind of a niche.
Yeah.
Kind of a unique thing. Honestly, though, and, I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I'm concerned because the guy doesn't fucking leave. First, he's out in the middle of nowhere, and I know what that's like, being out 9,000 feet in Colorado for a while.
Yeah.
But he doesn't go anywhere. Down. Good. But he even has his groceries delivered. I mean, the guy's a friggin' hermit. Now, on the one hand, I can appreciate that, because I'd be like, damn, there were times when I would have not wanted to fucking go anywhere either. But he also really likes cats. So, I mean, there's a lot of people are going to be judging him here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I feel like as a nutrition coach, working from home, it can get to be like a pretty isolated lifestyle. You know, it's not like you go to the gym and then you hang out with all your friends there. You go to the gym and then you spend another 2 hours not talking to people with your headphones on, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like the old guy and have the young guys be like, oh, God, whatever. He's telling me what's going to happen. But I stand by this 100%. It's probably very appealing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But as the years pile up, man, I mean, I have literally thought about getting a part-time job just to get the fuck out of the house more.
Really?
The only reason I haven't is since being down here, I'm kind of in the middle of everything again. I can get out because I'm so close to everything. But in Colorado, I was going crazy. You really get to the point over time where you miss that interaction, the face-to-face interaction. And, you know, it's like, oh, no, I'm not going to get sick. You just got to years and years, and most people, it'll get to them. It just kind of gets to you a little bit.
I'm picturing, remember the movie The Shining? I'm picturing, like, you're sitting at your computer, all work and no play makes Skip a dull boy.
You know what? I don't think I've seen The Shining, even though we live.
What?
15 minutes from where it was filmed in Estes Park, but I don't think I've seen it. You know, I've seen a few Stephen King movies, but I'm not a huge, I'm not a scary movie fan. My wife gives me shit. She's like, oh, it's because you're just scared. You're a pussy. You don't want to watch them. I'm like, that doesn't have anything to do with it. It's not appealing to me. I haven't seen any of the Halloweens or the Friday the 13th.
Well, this is different because this was a Stanley Kubrick film, and that dude.
Oh, okay. See, yeah. I thought it was a Stephen King. I'm sorry.
Well, no, he wrote the story, but Stanley Kubrick made the movie, and it was a trip, man. I mean, that was before my time, but that was it was a classic. That's for sure. Listen, though, I'm going to jump right into some questions, because that's really what the people want to hear, is get some bodybuilding education, some information. And we'll start from the top here. I'm going to go to this one because I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Rob Urich, he says, what do you think of caffeine usage in the off season? Can it hold back muscle growth? Skip, where are you with stims in general? I feel like a lot of the old school guys, I'm just going to guess here, like, I don't take any pre-workouts, but what do you think?
Well, I don't take any pre-workouts.
I knew it.
No, you know, but it's not like I'm really against them. All it is I, you know, people will say, well, I take, you know, NO for pumps or anything. I get fucking insane pumps anyway. I mean, I always, even when I'm dieting, I guess maybe if I'm really depleted, I might not get as good of a pump, but it's just never been anything that's terribly funny. I can't take because of my nerve damage. It hurts like hell because it fires up my skin, but there just isn't really anything. So when it comes to stimulants, I mean, I'm not sure that I understand the anti-caffeine, I don't want to say movement, but trend. I just don't.
Is there a trend now?
Well, maybe a trend isn't, but there's a lot of questions about caffeine recently, not only with it being a stimulant and what it can take away or detract from workouts, but even now with this question with it being the off season. And I've heard a couple people asking about that in reference to gains. And look, I just don't see it. If something has come out that I'm not aware of that shows caffeine being detrimental to gains, I want to see it, because I'd be very surprised by that if it had any negative impact. You know, and the other thing you have to factor in too is if it's relatively insignificant, but if it's just something where, oh, they did a study and it shows that there's this thing. Studies are tough because things that work out on paper don't always work out when practically applied. So, you know, I'd be willing to hear if there's anything that says that it's not a good idea or they could get in the way of gains, but I'm pretty fucking skeptical because caffeine's been around for a while and so have gains.
What do you think, Scott?
I think it's just idiotic if someone thinks caffeine. Well, I mean, unless you're like taking like, you know, 10 grams a day of caffeine, you know, okay. I guess it could stunt your appetite a little bit, but I mean, it just sounds like that's digging a little deep down the rabbit hole.
That's what I mean. You look at it as a stimulant and go, oh, it'll, you know, bear down on the adrenals. And then you're talking about, you know, all the responses to that. I understand how it can be, you know, explained away or justified. But I mean, you probably would have to be putting away a wicked amount of caffeine for it to even begin to have some negative effect.
I think you're picking at like the bottom 0.001% of something that could affect it. Right. I mean, keep snorting the Coke, but don't do the caffeine. I think it's digging a little deep. They could do much into it.
All right. Well, I'm going to move on in that case.
Moderation's a key and everything.
All right. Give me just a second here. I just started a watch party while I was at it. That way we can try to get a couple more followers. Guys, this show is being aired live over at the Facebook page, Advices Radio. Somebody asked how to bring out their adductors. I mean...
Okay, but when you say adductor, I mean, specifically it was about sartorius. Or am I on the wrong question?
No, I just was telling you off my memory.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think he said that, and then he said adductors. So I remember adductors, but I think he did say sartorius as well.
Yeah, because I thought it was more, his question seemed to be more focused around whether there was a possibility to develop the sartorius muscle more, but neither here nor there. I mean, it still comes down to, you know, to a certain degree, the inside of your legs. But I do think it's night and day, because there's, as far as sartorius, that is not a muscle that is essentially a prime mover or an agonist. It's, you're going to have, you got to be freaky wicked genetically to get large sartorius muscles, because they're, that muscle is primarily made for like stabilization. It's not something you can actually train. And some people they're probably arguing, going, no, I Googled it and there are exercises there. You're not going to find an exercise that is specifically for the sartorius. You'll find exercises where the sartorius may have to stabilize the leg more in one exercise versus the other, you're not going to get, in my opinion, you're not going to get growth out of your sartorius muscle. Like if you're going after it and going, well, I have a weak sartorius, it's just not going to happen. Now, as far as adductors, I mean, and I'm wondering what S2H thinks too, but because I don't remember if we touched on this with Dave or not, but I think with adductors, honestly, a lot of adductor size or quad size from the, on the inside of the quad, leg size on the inside of the quad from the front, is not just adductor, but I mean, it's to a certain degree, it's hamstring development too. Mm. And I think that the key to that is, I think it's squatting deeper. And obviously there's limitations. I could go on and on as far as range of motion and, you know, hip pelvic tilt and things like that. But basically, it used to be that you would squat ass to grass, and that's all it was. You were a pussy if you didn't. That's pretty much, I think there's now an asterisk next to it, which says squat ass to grass until your hips start to rotate. Mm. Because when they start to rotate under you, that's where it's dangerous. And you're limited by your range of motion, primarily based on that flexibility of your hips and your lower back, because you're going to injure yourself if you say ass to grass and you drop in and your hips are going to continue to come under you. You'll end up fucking yourself up real bad. Mm. But I think that that's more, I think that's how you're going to get more development there. So as far as answering real quick, just the answer to your question about how to get more separation is, first things first, you got to have size. You get more size so that there's more muscle to carve into when it's time to get lean. And I know that some skinny people will be like, I'll get shredded, dude. I get shredded. You're the exception to the rule. You need more size. The more size you have, the more, you know, it's almost like saying, yeah, I can't get my upper chest shredded because you don't have one. Mm. So you have to get one, or my inner chest, or bullshit like that. Yeah, you actually have to have muscle before you start carving on it.
Yeah, I do feel like the bigger a muscle is, no matter how conditioned you get, like the bigger your muscle is in any given body part, the better like conditioning, the better shape, or the better lines and separation you can get in it. No question. Yep. Scott, anything you wanted to add to that, man?
Take two Bosa balls, a little bit more than shoulder width of sand on them, feet the toes slightly out, do a PAS squat with like a kettlebell or dumbbell. Don't break the plane. Go about just about the even plane. Hold for a second. Come up. You'll love those.
Did you understand any of that, Skip? Or is that just my computer?
No.
Okay. Say it again. Tell us again.
Give me a sec. Okay. So take two Bosa balls.
Yeah.
On the floor. Stand on them. 1 foot on each one. Toes slightly, balls just about a little over shoulder width apart. Take a kettlebell, or a dumbbell, and do a PAS squat, just down to parallel. Don't drop your hips any lower. Hold for a second, come up, back down, and keep your back straight.
I do feel like, you know what I've seen, and tell me if you guys can relate to this, because this is kind of making me think about what Scott's talking about. Like the plie squats, you know, that real wide stance, I feel like, what I saw in my legs were, first of all, they all, like everything needed to come up, you know? And then after I was good at developing my quads, then I started getting like a decent quad sweep, but then they felt shallow, you know? It was, Shelby had pointed it out to me. He was like, you know, with your legs, because I kept focusing on like more sweep. They don't look big enough, more sweep. But then it was the inside of my leg, the adductors that were shallow. And so really it came down to my stance, because in order to get my sweep, in order to get my legs, the thickness of the quad to develop, I was kind of standing like shoulder width or even a little closer on my squats. And it just, the way I could hit it, it like really tapped into my quads that way. But then I didn't get that inner thigh as much, versus like if I take a real wide stance, it doesn't seem to hit my quads as much as it does my adductors and my glutes.
You know, well, the point of the Bosa balls is though you're forced to stabilize.
Okay.
So that's where that part comes in. That's the difference between just doing it a regular squat that way, or they're forcing you to stabilize and do that squat. But you don't want to get your hips, like Skip said, down and behind you like ass to the grass. So you're only going to go to parallel and hold, unless you're really, really flexible. Right. But most of us aren't. So that's why you hold there, but those balls are forcing you to stabilize. Makes sense?
I just sent you a picture of S2H. I thought that's what you were looking at on your phone. I sent you a picture of S2H. It'll come up on your phone here.
I don't get it.
Oh God, are you not that old for real?
I don't know.
You don't know what that emblem is?
No.
Oh, it's the AOL, man. Now it doesn't work because I had to explain it.
Oh, I get it, because you're talking about the connection.
Yes.
Why is it me? You're the one that he always has. We were fine on the connection until Mr. Catman came on, and then it went to shit.
Hey, listen, if he knew who the fucking AOL man was, none of this conversation would have happened. You wouldn't even know I was talking about it.
Well, I'm going to kill your fucking cat, too.
It'll be easier to win the contest. Less cats to name.
Don't name the cat. That, you know.
All right. Let's see here. I'm looking at the thread here. Josh Marzik, he says, after using it for years, has Skip's protocol for metformin changed using it for longevity versus carb management?
Come on, Skip. Tell us.
What do you do now? His microphone's not working at all.
Yeah, it's fucking peace and quiet.
Look at the look on his face right now.
No microphone. Look, you can hear us.
No, now what it was, I muted it because I had to cough up a lung, and it didn't come back on. So I was talking. Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know what I was saying. Now I'm distracted by my fucking mechanical failure here, my microphone.
Your metformin skip load protocol. Do you still use?
Yeah. No, I'm not a. You know, here's the thing. I have considered very recently because I've had to push my calories up so much. So that means I've got, you know, a lot of carbs going through me now that I'm not normally used to. I mean, we're talking like off the chart compared to what I normally do. Okay. So I have thought about going back and playing with the metformin with this higher carb intake. The thing is I don't want to say I'm not going to. I'm still thinking about it. But I don't like this stuff. I don't like that I feel flat on it. And I keep thinking, I'm like, well, I'm on so many more carbs. I probably wouldn't, you know, feel that flat on it. But it just, to me, it just kind of defeats the purpose. It's like, I want higher carbs. I want to take advantage of, you know, what potential insulin response. I don't really want to dull it down. I'm trying to put on weight. I'm trying to put on size. So I don't know. I let's just say I have not used it in quite a while because I don't like it because it makes me feel flat. Plus it gives me the shits. It doesn't work with my GI very well unless I take it for a long time consistently, and I don't want to. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the compound. So, you know, I'll tell you what, S2H, do you think that adding it in would be a good idea for me to see how I respond now to it with these higher carbs? Or do you think that basically what I just said is probably pretty valid in the sense that it's like, why fuck with it?
Didn't work before. It's not going
to
work now.
That's really what I hate to make, like to oversimplify it, but that's kind of how I feel. And I'm like, well, I could come back and try, but I know if I tried, it's going to take a solid, probably 3 or 4 weeks because I'm going to have to deal with the doo-doos first from, you know, my gut changing from it and stuff like that. So I'm like, well, I've got the extended version. I could work up to like 2 1,000 milligram doses a day. I'm pretty high carb. I just don't think there's going to be any benefit there. If I thought there would be, I would be like, yeah, I think I'm going to try it out. But I'm certainly leaning away from it. I'm just not that big of a fan on it.
I think you should try it, though, and take some Zinacal with it, and that'll make for a really big mess.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be entertaining.
Yeah, you'll be loads of fun.
Maybe do a video, too.
911. Pull the car over. Get up against the wheel. Yeah.
And you know what?
I'm not a big metformin guy. I never really found it to be. You know, I think it's okay. I think it's just one of those ones that I don't know. I never saw it to be this great difference, a huge difference maker. I think it's got it's different than the caffeine thing. It's got more legitimacy than that. But I just never saw it to be really that great a thing. It's okay.
I've never used it personally. I mean, I've worked with a lot of people that have had experience with it. I've never used it. I've always stuck with berberine, but everything I've ever heard, you know, I've never had a really, I have a hard time getting fat to begin with, and insulin sensitivity issues. I feel like berberine's always worked well. I remember though, Skip, didn't you try it and you didn't like it, or you didn't follow through with berberine? This was like back in the PED radio days. I can't remember what ended up going on with berberine for you.
You know what, I think what it really is I've just always had a very ample supply of metformin on hand.
Yeah.
And so I played with berberine just a little bit, but you know, from what I hear, it's supposed to be, you know, so much better than metformin. I didn't notice much of a difference, but I didn't use it a lot either. I think if had I continued to use or saw a really big benefit to metformin and continued to use it, I probably would have given berberine a run, a fair shake, ran it for a while to see and be able to compare the two. But, you know, I don't anticipate, because it's funny because I know there's a question in there about berberine as well. So I was going to try to kind of transition to that, because people may think, well, if you don't like metformin, then why not try berberine?
Yeah.
Because I think it's basically the same fucking thing. I mean, it's looking for the same, you know, if berberine works better, it's not going to all of a sudden, you know, and I say that because some people claim that it does, whether it does or it doesn't, it's essentially the same response. So, or the same, getting the same thing done, you're taking it for the same reason. So am I going to all of a sudden not be flat on berberine? I would really doubt that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think one thing that metformin does help assist in is people have long-term alcohol use. So, you know, they've got some sense, they got some other things going on with that. And I think, you know, that's, it's actually been used medically for that reason. But yeah, I mean, berberine, I think it was way back. We all did the berberine experiment. I think there's some validity to both of them, but they're not the, you can just change your damn diet, baby. You know?
Well, here, hold on. Clarify, because I don't think that could, what you said, I think, could be confusing to the listeners. Make the connection again real quick with metformin and liver disease from, I think you're saying liver disease.
Well, no, it's alcohol triggers, you know, I'm talking like alcoholics, people that have drank excessively in way, you know, it affects your insulin sensitivity and everything, you know, long-term alcohol use. So there's some use in it in that. I know a few people that have had some issues with that and had problems with blood sugar levels, different things, and they were prescribed metformin. It wasn't a really high, it was a pretty moderate dose, but, you know, I don't know. And the berberine thing, too, was, I think, so berberine and metformin, they have a, what's the best way to put it? You go from A to B kind of the same with them, but the way you get to A to B is a little bit different. So they're not apples to apples. Maybe they're like Gala apples to Honeycrisp apples.
Right. But would you expect that I might be fuller on the berberine?
Well, I thought you were full all the time and I could always get a pump. That's what you said earlier in the show. So
you're breaking up. So it's probably good.
Well, I don't know, Scott. I heard it fine.
Apparently he's laughing. Yeah.
I don't know, dude. I mean, I don't think I know more than people that listen to the show now, so I would think you probably wouldn't get anything out of it, or not much.
Wow, that was pretty.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah, I mean, God damn.
Well, no, I mean, I know your the way you approach things. I don't think it's like saying, okay, take a Kia to the race and win with it when you could just take the Ferrari. Right. You know what I mean?
No, and I knew what you were saying. I just think it may have come off wrong to the.
Well, no, I mean, I don't want to talk about your personal programs, but I don't think metformin's something for your program. Make sense?
It does, and I know you can see me violently clearing my throat, but you can't hear me because I keep muting my mic. Yeah, it's like I'm a professional. It's like I've done this before. You know,
you are. You look professional.
No, oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Not as professional as I do, but you know,
I can hear the sincerity in your voice too, and I appreciate that as well.
I still hate your cats too.
I know that, and I hear the sincerity in that statement too.
All right, now to the next question.
I remember when we had Colette Nelson on Beckett Advices Radio episode 25. She was totally against metformin. And her thought was that she said it's also really toxic on the liver. I just thought of that when you guys were talking about alcoholism, and that was her thought. She said that it can be liver toxic. She was a bigger fan of actually using slow acting insulin in place of it. That was her thought, like Lantus, things like that.
Makes sense.
Let's see here. Next question. I'll go to this one. How do you gauge when it's time to eat again on a skip load? Do you go by time? Do you eat when you are really hungry or when you're like, I think I could eat again?
Yes.
Wait, what?
No. No, it's just everything is kind of individual when it comes to that. And I always appreciate, because I skip like anytime I can. But and I don't mean this shitty, but I've been over the skip loading thing so many times that sometimes I feel like the rest of the listeners are like, oh my God, another question for skip loading. Basically, I would just say this. Anytime you want to try to schedule meals anywhere between about 2.5 and 3 hours apart. Typically, you can always eat in between if you're more hungry and that sort of thing. What can happen is you really have to find a groove with your meals, because the first few weeks that you start a skip loading protocol, you're going to have a hard time gauging how much to eat. The first meal almost always ruins the second meal, and people will come back and say, well, you know, I just couldn't eat much the second meal because I ate too much the first meal. You got to find that balance. And then from there, look, if you get hungry early, you can always eat it earlier. It's essentially the hunger. There isn't a stringent black and white, highly structured eating time frame. It's really based, the entire protocol is really based around hunger. If you're hungry, you can process more food, get more food in you. I mean, that's kind of the basic or the rudimentary way to, you know, explanation of how to time your meals for skip loading.
Okay. Yeah, and don't forget too, like we've said before, there's a lot of new people. So there may be even people here who don't even know what skip loading is.
You know, that's a good point too, and I'm glad you made that point, because I certainly don't want to ever talk down, you know, a questioner. So we appreciate the questions, and especially when they have something to do with my training or my nutrition protocol. So if that's the way I came across, that's not what I meant. I just think at least in doing the show for, you know, this one for how many episodes and then PED prior, I know sometimes I think that readers can be like, oh God, not skip load again, or oh God, not skips cats again.
We don't feel that way.
No, I think S2H does. Yeah. But outside of that, no, I certainly don't want to down, you know, play that down. All I'm saying is it really is hunger, and there isn't a very black and white. And if you want more information on skip loading, I mean, my longevity DVD and the TRT DVD, they're all free. They're over 25 hours a piece of free information. I cover skip loading in depth on the teamskip.com website.
So you can spend 25 hours with skip nonstop if you wanted to.
Yeah.
The bottom line is you got to pay skip to get the skip load protocol. All right. Let's be straight up about this.
Not necessarily.
This is like our what? Like 5 millionth podcast, and you've never said what the skip load is. So let's be honest, people. You want to know the skip load? Pay the man.
It would be the easy way, but it's still out there if you don't want to pay for it.
Or you can pay me less, and I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on out there, too.
I'm looking at, Josh Hauserman, he commented a picture on our show thread, and he said, Scott, this is my law office waiting room. The girls in the office collect rescues, LOL. In the law office waiting room, you could see his name on the glass window up front, you know, in reverse, because you're looking from inside the waiting room. Each chair in the waiting room has a cat sitting on it right now.
See, I think that's awesome. I don't think it's awesome that he's not taking responsibility for his love of cats. He's blaming it on his teammate staff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's weak. You got to up your cat game and your cat responsibility there, your cat accountability. But it is awesome. It's funny, though, because, and S2H will back this up, there are just people, you're either a dog guy.
Yeah.
Or you're a cat guy. You can say you're both, but that's just riding the fence, trying to be PC and that sort of thing. I'm not a big dog fan. When you're walking around with your fucking yappy dog outside down here in trendy, skinny Hipsterville down here where I live in Flagler Village, you don't care a lot about that dog. You care about how much attention that dog is going to get you. So I have my issues with some dog owners with their yappy little, and then the dogs start fighting and they think it's so cute. Oh, they're just figuring each other out. No, they're not. They fucking hate each other. And you're just standing there using it as a topic to get conversation started. But anyway, I'm a cat guy. If you're a cat guy, you got to step up. You got to be like, I'm a fucking cat dude. So it's Hauserman, right? You're a cat guy.
Yeah, if he wasn't, then he wouldn't let them have those cats in there, would he? Get those fucking cats out of my office, right?
I saw the picture. I thought it was pretty fucking cool. But you know what? Some people are going to come in there, and they're going to be dog people, and they're going to be like, oh, my God, these cats. Yeah. Oh, I have allergies. I can't. You know what I mean? You're going to piss somebody off at some point when you run a business. So it's a ballsy move. Good for him.
Yeah, that was my first thought, was like allergies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just not liking cats. Some people don't like cats. They just fucking don't like them.
Sure. This much power. This much power. Hey, what's up, guys? I want to take just a really brief pause from this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear to shout out our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. Guys, True Nutrition has been around for a long time. They've been around since I've been seriously involved with the sport of bodybuilding, and I bet they've been around for the length of a lot of your careers in the sport, too. I use that word career loosely because most of us aren't legitimately making money off of what we're doing, but we love this freaking sport. And so do the owners of this company. They aren't just here trying to make a buck off of you. These guys love what they're doing. They love to help people. And they love putting together high-quality products. There's a lot of supplement companies out there that are not meeting label claims. That they are, you know, there isn't strict testing in the supplement world in the United States. You know, the way there is with pharmaceuticals and foods and everything else. So there's a lot of people who are getting away with things, and they're taking advantage of the system, and they're taking advantage of you. I truly believe in this company. These are people that I will back 100%. And I give you my word that if True Nutrition says that they've got something in their product, that they're going to meet those claims. They've got high quality products, everything from whey isolate to casein to egg protein to pea protein, basically any protein you could think of, and they have thousands of different flavor combinations that you can choose from. So there's a flavor out there for everyone. There's a protein out there for everyone. And beyond that, they have a ton more supplements, carbohydrates for intra, pre, post. You've got, you know, various different amino acids that are available. I love using their L-tyrosine powder to get some mental edge. I use the citrulline malate before I train, along with the beta-alanine. They have a lot of other things that you guys just go over to the site, truenutrition.com. Also, check out their oatmeal blends. And if you use our code, it will help to support what we're doing because it lets True Nutrition know that you support our programming. Our codes are Advices, and the other code is Advices Oats. Advices Oats will actually get you 25% off, which is a hefty discount from their oatmeal blends. While I got your ear, why don't we give a shout out to good old Skip, Skip Hill. Skip, thanks for being with us, man, and putting out over 70 episodes of Blood, Sweat, and Gear now. I've really appreciated the entertainment, the education, and the friendship that you've brought to me on this show. And thanks for putting up with S2H for all these episodes. If you guys want to reach out to Skip, if you want to work with him, check him out, teamskip.com. Skip's been in the online diet coach game for literally over 2 decades now. He's been there, he's done that, he's seen it all, and he would be a great coach. So reach out to him if you're looking for a coach, see if you guys would be the right fit. All right, guys, let's get back to this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Thanks for bearing with me and listening to the ads. Something like this. To get 1,000 miles from the earth. All right. What's the dumbest injection protocol you've ever come across? Ooh, that could be... God, I can't even think of that. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen some out there stuff that would...
Skip's had a few of them.
What are you talking about? Just like volume or...
I don't... It could be. He doesn't say. So he just says, how do you interpret that, Skip? He says, what's the dumbest injection protocol you've ever come across? So it could be the amount of shots per week. It could be the amount of volume per shot. It could be the sites that this person has decided to use.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, there's a lot out there, you know.
I don't know about that one. I mean, I mean, if you're just taking more gear than you need to, that's one thing. But I mean, I've seen some pretty high volume protocols for no other reason than a lot of their compounds are, you know, 100 mg per mil, and they're not, you know, terribly strong. I mean, prop is supposed to be 100 mg per mil. You know, it may be made differently, but it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
So your props and your DHBs and, you know, your what else, you know, basically your trends and stuff like that, they're going to be in that neighborhood. I know somebody will be like, that's only 75, 76 milligram.
Yeah.
But whatever. Whatever. Well, fuck. I get to the
tough question to answer.
It is. It is kind of tough because I almost want to say, you know, no, I just don't know. You know, if you're trying to put, and I'm reaching here with this, but if you're trying to put you know, more than 3 mil in a smaller muscle group at a time, that's probably pushing it. But, you know, I can't really think of anything, though, that would make me go, oh, my God, that's great. You know, I know some of the dosing protocols of, you know, of people in the past, and it's been fucking crazy, but I'm not, I don't put those things out there, you know, publicly, because that information is not my business to, you know, to put share, out there.
Yeah.
But some of it is, you know, obviously fucking crazy, but you know what? Probably not any crazier than anybody has ever seen on any other forum from some 25-year-old wanting to get huge and isn't anywhere near the size of the guys doing it that are actually putting in, you know, putting in amounts that are huge, and they're huge too. So there's that. But I don't know. I mean, S2H, what do you have any, I can't.
I knew a guy that was taking 30 IUs of farm GH a day. That was pretty crazy.
Crossland crazy from did
the financial standpoint, financial standpoint of it. You know, I mean, I don't think he got as much. Well, he didn't. Not that he didn't get something out of it, but it did. The bang for the buck definitely wasn't there.
Yeah, Dave Crossland ran doses like that with farm grade GH, and after that he was like, you know what? He was like, it just wasn't worth it. And it took going to that extreme where he said, like, I would only ever take 2-3 units. I would only ever suggest that, because anything above that, you're really not going to get too much. He doesn't even believe that you get a lot of muscle growth out of growth hormone. He said he thinks it's good for fat loss and it's good for recovery. But he was like, you're not going to grow muscle on growth. Even growth in insulin, he feels you get more like retention in the muscle. But his thought is, it's like really cost of benefit is just so, so low. I couldn't imagine that, man. 30 units a day. That's just nuts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was doing the math on it. I was like, dude, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we've talked about it sometime in the past. It's just, the bang for the buck's just not there. You know, I just don't, I mean, I saw it in this person. Did he look different? I would say not so much size, but the way his muscle looked different. You know, he wasn't the oldest guy, so more mature, more a different kind. It's kind of hard to describe, you know, a different kind of physique, but it wasn't like, okay, the 10 grand you just spent was really worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. I mean, I don't remember the exact amount, but I'm just like, wow, that's, some people just got to try stuff. I knew a guy that would always, like, he had, kind of on Skip's point, he had what he thought was a weak body part. It was his biceps and triceps. He thought his arms, and he would pump everything into his arms. Hmm. And then finally he got some abscesses and he, you know, it got to the point where his arms, he thought they were getting bigger, but they were like abscessed and getting, you know, sterile abscesses and the inflammation from constantly just pumping the oil in there, and the oil build up subcutaneous and stuff. I mean, and then like one arm got bigger than the other because he thought it was because he wasn't injecting it at the proper angle. I'm like, dude, you just got to just like go on, just get some fucking motor oil and pump it in there. Yeah. It was basically like putting it was like using Synthol. It was the same. He was getting the same effects because it wasn't actually. You know, he was getting abs. I mean, he had some nasty. He had two really nasty sterile abscesses and one tricep. They were like, they looked like little golf balls. Yeah. Eventually, so he finally gave up on that after, but he didn't learn his lesson too quick, and it didn't work out well.
Hmm. You know, Valentino said he only used like I can't remember what it was, but it was like Prop or low dose EQ, I think. He had like the vet grade EQ that was like 50 milligrams per milliliter. I know he's claimed that that's all he ever put in his biceps to get his arms that big. I don't know. I know a lot of people don't believe that, but
sticking up in there, it'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So? Sticking up in there. But I mean, let's be fair. You know, I'm not going to badmouth Valentine. I'm giving my opinion based on what I know. And if that's what he's saying, no one's going to know any different. But all I say to that is that oil would disperse quicker than something that would hang around to provide like a Synthol, like an old school Synthol that would provide that type of size. I understand that you know, 50 milligram EQ would provide a hell of a volume of oil, but it's an oil that the body breaks down relatively quickly, and it would, in my opinion, would not cause anywhere near the size that he had. So good on him for coming up with a, how do I say, like minimizing the situation, but that's what I think he's doing, in my opinion. So he can call, you know, if he happens to hear that I'm bad-mouthing him, he can bad-mouth me back and say I'm an asshole and want to smack me in my mouth and, you know, shit like that. But I'm not buying that for one fucking second. And you know what I also don't understand, without going off on a tangent here, is why people struggle when it comes to their use of synthol anyway. Huh. Whether he did it or whether he's struggling with it is, I don't know. It's my opinion that that's his answer is silly. But there are other well-known people in the sport who really struggle with wanting to admit, sure, when it seems painfully obvious that they're using it. And why not? I mean, if you have a good physique and people think you do, and you do take it, why not just own the shit and be like, yeah, you know, I'm careful with how I use it. I think that it accentuates my physique, and I don't think that I necessarily look all fucked up and deformed. I think I look pretty good on it, and I use it. I've used it. Why not fucking say it? Nobody ever says it.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
You think it's maybe like, you know, we're in a society, our subculture, we accept steroid use, you know? I mean, there's the natties out there who are like, oh shit, you only look that way because you use gear. But for the vast majority of us, we know you still have to put the work in. I think with synth oil, there's the conception that like, now you're not even putting the work in. It's literally just truly cosmetic. Yeah. It's like, we accept steroids aren't cheating, but we think synth oil is, you know, there's a line, I think some sort of line in there that people draw maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure that plays a part. And I also think that they think that if they just lie and deny, that no one will ever know the truth, and they just stick to their story. And, you know, that the large majority of the people questioning them, it's like being on a forum and having some kid question you about synthol when he weighs 145 pounds and he's 5'11". Yeah. It really doesn't hold much value. But I think that it's just easier to lie and deny. And I think people tend to think that they'll have less people giving them shit about it, as opposed to if they owned it, then they would just get bashed forever on end. And well, he admitted to it. And I don't know. I mean, it's my best guess. I don't know. I used it in 03 or actually, I'm sorry, 04, quite a bit for
Peter.
Exactly, for prep and everything else. And I was pretty transparent about it. I was pretty honest. I thought that it helped, but didn't think it was a deal maker. And it wasn't the old school synthol. Again, I'm not justifying it, but the reason I say that it wasn't the old school is because shortly after I quit using it, the benefits didn't stay like it would have, or like they would have with an old school synthol compound. Mm. So, you know, I'm not trying to say I owned it and I'm a fucking angel and no one else does. They're not. All I'm saying is I used it. I owned it. Maybe it was a different time because it was 15 years ago. I don't know. But I don't understand why they don't. I just don't understand it. Hmm.
So you used it, you used enough to actually see a difference, but it you're saying it faded. Is that something you would use right up to the show, or is it something you cut off beforehand? How does that usually work from the information you had gathered?
Yeah, I'd have to go back through my notes, but I know I cut it off at least a week or two prior. You know, it's a catch-22 because it did help with my, it was just for my shoulders because I've always been about as wide as a Barbie doll. so I've tried to work on that over the years as much as possible.
Sure.
Damn.
You really like that.
Yeah, apparently.
Sorry, Barbie. I see a Barbie doll when I looked at him.
That's about my
way. Look at that chair. The chair's only like about 8 inches wide. And
really wider than a Barbie doll. Yeah, this is helpful. You're
feeling better about yourself by the minute,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'll finish my response when S2H is done.
Then you have McNally. He's like 8 feet past his chair.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just sitting closer to the key. Is you just gotta lean forward, sit closer to the screen. It makes you look wider.
I'm the bodybuilder who fits in a spirit coach or spirit economy seat without too much problem. They're going, I don't know why you're having such a problem fitting in that. I fit in fine. It's comfortable to me. Anyway, I'd have to check my notes again, but I ran it during prep and everything else. But the catch 22 that I was getting at was you're going to get more size and you get more roundness, but you also give up detail.
Oh yeah. So, yeah.
So that's kind of the catch of, you know, it's almost like which one is more important. How weak are your shoulders? I looked at it that my shoulders are really fucking weak. So to me, I would have rather had the size.
Okay.
The size was more beneficial than, you know, I was going to be in pretty good condition everywhere else. It wasn't like my shoulders were going to all of a sudden stand out and be like, oh, they're not ripped like everything else. But, you know, it did. It faded. I mean, we're talking like inside of a month, it faded quite a bit. But that's because that was a safer, thinner version that's put out by Synthetech. You know, I hate to plug a non-sponsor, but I mean, the reality is that company's been, they've been good to me over the years, and they have a few really good products that to this day, I won't do a show without using Scintillator. But that's another thing in and of itself, or another topic. But
what is it? What is that? Tell us.
It's a adenosine monophosphate, and it's a very strong vasodilator, but it's and I think I used it for the first time in 03 or 04. And I will not do a show without it. But anyway, I can get into that compound more if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, tell me about it. This is something I know. This is new to me. This is totally brand new to me.
You mean right now?
I will have to back Skip's call on this. They do make some good products.
Yeah, they do. I've been as far as the AMP, the Synthetine, Synthogene, which some of them, to be honest, I mean, they're pretty much the same thing, but they have different. I don't want to say they're exactly the same, but they, you know, some of their stuff is pretty close, but it's actually effective.
But what's this dilator product exactly?
The dilator it's called Scintillator, and it's adenosine monophosphate.
Huh.
It's basically what you do. It's very, very thin. So you want, depending on your size, you want say 7 to 10 mil about an hour or two prior to going on stage. And it's going to, in about 2 to 5 minutes after injecting it, it's going to scare the shit out of you because it will start vasodilating everything so fast that you start breathing. Your breathing is fucked up. I mean, it'll make you feel like you're hyperventilating and you don't want to be moving around. You don't want to even walk up or down stairs. You want to stand the fuck right there, control your breathing, make sure you don't have a panic attack.
Holy shit.
And wait for it to pass. And once it passes after a couple minutes, the effect of the compound will stay with you for easily for the next 12 to 16 hours. And you don't have to take it again, and you don't even feel like you've took it or taken it. But anyway, what it also, there's some secondary issues to it. Not only is it a strong vasodilator, but it also makes it very difficult for you to cramp. So people who may have a tendency to cramp on stage, I know back in the day we used to use quinine sulfate. Yeah. It was quite common. And I, in my opinion, since Scintillator came out, because so many people use it, I mean, I can't remember the last time I heard quinine sulfate mentioned when it comes to prep, because so many people use it. I thought it was funny because a certain Mr. Olympia who has a penchant for expensive bracelets and losing them, him and his prep coach. Actually, not him. It's not on him. But his prep coach was claiming there for a couple years about how he had some secret to, you know, getting veiny prior to a show and this compound. Like it was, and I laughed. I laughed because I'm like, oh, that's funny because your client heard that from me. So if you want to try to take credit for it, maybe he knew it too. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I had the conversation with his client, Mr. Olympia. He wasn't yet, but the point being, he knew about that compound
before
his Scintillator. Exactly. Now it could be a different version of adenosine monophosphate, but the truth is, and I think S2H will back this up too, Scintillator probably has 90% of the market on AMP. I mean, they're known for in the competitive arena as being the go-to. Wouldn't you agree with that, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones that's been around that really just never gets talked about because people don't want to talk about it. And
right.
I'll tell you this, if you're going to use it, you better go by that. You better go exactly how they tell you to use it. Don't go like, yeah. Oh, more is not better with that product.
No shit.
And, no.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. I've known about it for a long time, but it's just one of those ones I think that, I don't know, it's just one of those ones that people just didn't talk about because it does give you that kind of an edge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, if you tend to be vascular, it's not going to create vascularity if you're not a very vascular person. But if you have vascularity, I'm telling you, it's fucking retarded. But when I say it'll make you hit the floor, I mean, if you do too much, or people used to come back and do another bottle before, or another 10 mil before the night show.
Yeah.
And before they would even get the injection, because you got to go 5 mil in each glute. So, and it goes in thin, it goes in fast.
Yeah.
But before they could get the second 5 mil in, they were passed out on the fucking floor.
Oh, Jesus.
With the needle still stuck in their fucking ass. I mean, ugh. It really didn't, you know, can you imagine? It's just too much. You don't need to redo it for a night show. So the effect will last all day. Now, there are, you know, other things, you know, about it and everything else. But I mean, it'll make, when I say it makes you feel like shit,
yeah,
it makes you feel like fucking shit for 2 to 5 minutes. Sometimes I haven't even finished the second inject and I'm like, oh God, it's hit me already.
Do
fuck
you
my
need
life.
Let me ask you this. Do you need to take all 10, you said 10 cc's or whatever? Could you take like half of it? I wonder.
Probably could. I think what it is though is it's not one of those compounds where 5 will give me half.
Okay.
You know, 3 will give me 33%. It's more like you either get the effect, bam, or you don't get it at all.
No kidding. So do you have like a code for them or anything?
I would say, yeah, there's, no, I mean,
no, skip.
I don't know anything. I don't know anything.
Skip. Do you, because I had the site up here on the screen for anybody who's watching that wants to check this out. Is there a code? Because you said you worked with them.
Yeah, I don't think I have a discount code. I mean, you can always try Team Skip, but I don't think I have a code with them.
All right.
They just, I just have always, you know what it is? It's one of those situations where it's not like I would, you know, get a kickback or, you know, get percentage or anything from it. It's just that they had a couple really reliable compounds that I insisted on using personally. And I just wanted to make sure that my clients were using them too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just one of those things, but Syntholator is what you want to check out. And like I say, they have injectable L-carnitine for those who are, you know, big on injectable carnitine. They have some really good products and, you know, Scott's right. I mean, they've been around for, I mean, I want to think they started on professional muscle, but
yeah,
I mean, we're talking years ago. I mean, we're talking like, oh, you know, I was using it in 04.
I knew him since like 06 maybe. So
yeah.
I would say too, if you see a high level bodybuilding competition and a competitor is getting helped off stage with labored breathing, that may be the reason why, because they went over the edge. They went for the morning show, night show, or the day before show evening, and then they tried to come in again with it.
Damn.
Right.
On the night show, where a lot of people would say, oh, it's diuretics, it's something else, but I'm pretty sure it's that a lot
scary.
Of times.
It's scary, but it also sounds fascinating.
Well, it's just because you take too much. You can't have the more is better. My mentality with right. it.
But I mean, 10 mil is roughly. Yeah, I mean, if you're 200, you know, if you're 190 to 225 pounds, 10 mil is going to get the job done. Obviously, there can be dosage tweaks in there, but you know, you're going to have that. The impact it can change from show to show anyway. So it's like, you can't come off one show and go, well, I loaded this amount of carbs, so I'm going to load this amount next time and it'll be perfect.
Yeah.
but at least you could know, like, okay, it wasn't enough. I mean, some people don't get an effect. It's a small percentage of people. Some people just don't get much of an effect from it, but they will still say, well, I did notice though, that even though I didn't get real vascular from it, it didn't help in that sense. I didn't have any cramping. So, I mean, there's side benefits as well, that even for those, that small percentage of people that might not benefit from the vascularity component, they can still kind of fend off cramping, you know, if you have any issues with cramping, and I understand, I can hear it now. Well, if you're cramping, then you shouldn't be cramping because you don't have your water right, whatever. let me tell you something. People who are in retarded condition tend to cramp. It's just kind of a it's just a married thing. To what degree? I mean, it shouldn't be violent cramping, no. But if you're in ridiculous condition and you're dry as fuck and you're shredded, it's pretty likely that you're going to be dealing with some type of cramping.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm going to move on to the next question here. Scott, I know you only had a limited time, so if you got to go, let us know.
I'll go to the next question.
All right.
We
got a bunch more. I don't know.
Late start.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them we'll be able to tackle here. I'm going back on our list here. I missed this one when we first started. It's a good question. On the morning of the show, how do you determine if a client needs to add carbs, sodium, fats, water, or change nothing before going on stage? In other words, what are you looking for visually to make these last minute tweaks? Skip, where do you want to start with this one, man?
No, you know what I did is I had a text message come through and I have a new iPhone. I only caught half of it.
Scott, you want to take us here to start then? I know you've had just as much experience. You know, you've got a lot of experience in coaching over the years.
I think one thing is you have to look at there's a couple factors of that. Like, okay, this is a first time competitor. You're not, you know, do they have prior experience? Have you worked with them before? Because then if you've worked with somebody before, you know what condition they can get into, or there's some factors, but throw those all out. I would say the majority of the time, people need more sodium in most plans. They're just not pushing enough water to the muscle. You know, water follows sodium. I think that carbs definitely play a role, but I think most people look at it as it's all a carbohydrate thing when really it's a sodium thing to fill somebody out, to pull the subcutaneous water off into the muscle. You know, because water follows sodium. That's why I like Doritos. I think Doritos are like the king of getting people fuller, drier, or something like that. So I would say in most cases, if someone's a little flat, they're not quite as full as they need to be, but they are lean, then they need more sodium.
I've seen that a lot.
Where I think the mistake is made a lot of times is people start jamming people with like really simple sugar. And though there is sodium in that, that can kind of come back and bite you. It can maybe get them a little bit fuller and more vascular right away and they flatten back out. So I really think sodium is the key. Sometimes some sodium and a little bit of water will help too, depending on how they look. But I think sodium is the main one that not with everybody. I mean, some people know to do that, but I think that's the main one you might want to look at, and that's the one that may not come to the forefront right away, where a simple carb generally tends to be things a lot of people turn to when that's not the answer always.
I think that's a good call. What about adding water? I mean, I think that I know myself as a coach, I almost feel like I know that water at times you got to keep a lot of water in somebody. But I can feel like I'm water phobic almost because the rhetoric is that you cut water. You know, that's what we're all taught early on in competing is that, you know, I even remember, and I talked about this with Scott Stevenson last week, that like, you know, there was a protocol, a quote unquote plan that everybody followed to go into a show where, you know, you start out with 2 gallons and then you go to a gallon and a half and then you go to 3/4 and then you eventually cut water out. But I found there's some people that get so bone dry, if they get rid of their water, then they just flatten out completely. How can you tell, though? Is there a way ahead of time, Scott, that you can tell if it's the water? And also, Skip, I don't know if you saw it. I texted you the question because I figured you'd get a chance to think about it. Yeah.
I don't like to cut a lot of water. I mean, actually, if someone was competing, let's say on a Saturday morning, they would be drinking a lot of water near to that point, not completely, but you just want to manipulate the water. You want to get it to move where you want it to move, because you need that water to fill the muscle out. But I mean, I've worked with a couple of guys that have drank water, I mean, like tons of water, and we never stopped the water. Now there's no downside to that too, because they got to pee a lot. And so, you know, especially if they're going in on stage and they have to wait and they're in the pump up room and they got to piss. I mean, some of them got to go a lot because they're intaking so much water, but it makes them look better. So I think it depends on the person, but I'm not big on, you remember back like when people used to cut their water like on Wednesday?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or like crazy and cut all this. I mean, there was some stuff going on back, you know, decade more ago where people were cutting water down to nothing and they were doing distilled water and they were not taking any sodium and they were just flatter than a freaking 10-year-old. And then it was like a nightmare trying to get them filled out. No, I mean, water's important. You have to have water to fill the muscle, so you can't be dehydrated. You know, that's not, I mean, think about it. Anybody that's been dehydrated, go get a pump when you're dehydrated. It doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
So,
balance though, how can you tell if somebody needs more water? What are you going to see?
No vascularity in the morning.
Yeah. Vascular.
They're really flat. Flat early. Like you wake them up that Saturday morning, let's say they're doing a morning night show, like an NPC type show. And they are just flatter than they got nothing going. They look like they got no vascularity. So one thing I like to look at is people that have a lot of guys who have big rope muscle veins in their dagger and in their bicep. If that's just completely, that's a pretty good indicator that that the sodium water is not, they need some water, need some sodium, need something to fill out. And a lot of people just start taking carbs in and that doesn't fix the problem. And you get a spillover too with that. Once you try to pile everything on it one time.
Yeah.
So vascularity, if they're normally very vascular, they have noticeable vascularity most of the time. And all of a sudden that's just completely gone. That's a pretty good indicator.
Okay. So what do you think, Skip? How can you tell what somebody needs? Which because we have all these options. Now we know, you know, everybody's smart enough. We're listening to the podcast. We're reading the boards. We're listening to our favorite athletes. And we know what the thing, we see our favorite athletes on stage and we can see when they're off. How can we tell what trigger to pull?
Well, you can't know, as an example, if you just look at someone on stage, let's just say you're following Sean Roden for the last, you know, week before a show, yeah, and you see what he looks like 3 days out, you see what he looks like 2 days out, one day out, and then you see him on stage, like, oh, he fucked this up. You don't know, because you don't know what the plan was and what they were doing, which is hugely important in trying to figure out what needs to be changed, if anything, the morning of the show. You have to know what the story is or what the plan was going in and what they've done. You got to know where their sodium was, where their fluid intake was, whether there's a diuretic, what diuretic is being used, what the frequency is, the dosing, when they loaded, what they loaded with, and all that sort of stuff. Scott makes some good points with vascularity, because it's hugely important in trying to figure out if someone's flat or not. And vascularity is married to fullness. If you're increasing, you're filling out and you're loading or you're increasing carbs, however you're trying to fill out, and you're not getting vascular and you're taking in plenty of water, and then it's you're not filling out if you're not getting more vascular. Now, that doesn't mean that someone who's not vascular is going to all of a sudden get baskets relative to that person. But the point is these are the things, and these are obviously very hugely gray area, you know, situations or answers. But sodium is huge as well. And I have to laugh, just like Scott said, when people are loading carbs and they're not loading sodium, I mean, how do you expect that that's going to be an efficient process? It's very, very, your body will still load carbs, but it's not very efficient. So you have to know what's going on and where the water intake was. I also want to make another point too, that where some people can load or keep a high level of water intake and be, you know, look dry and hard and everything else, there are those who, and people will argue and say, well, then they're just not lean enough. That's a very blanket, not always true comment. There is some truth to it in the sense that if you're not lean enough, then you're not going to look like you're very dry and very hard. I can't disagree with that. But there are people who will be in condition and they can still be holding. Some people just hold a lot of fucking water, a lot of water, and they need to move it, or they're not going to look like they're in crazy good condition. So there are exceptions and there are situations that run the gamut on both sides. Anyway, loading is another good example. See, there's a million different answers here, so I'm trying to keep them to the ones that are more predictable or more common. Let's just say you load and you fill and spill. It's a typical Tuesday, Wednesday load, high carb days, refeed, whatever you want to call it. Then you get dry and you get into Friday and Saturday, and oh crap, on Saturday morning, you've been full, but all of a sudden you're flat. You're flattening out. There isn't much vascularity. The worst thing you can do at that point, and this is coming back to what Scott said, was to take in more carbs. Okay. You're full from you're maxed out is when it comes to carbs. Carbs aren't your issue. At that point, I mean, think about it. Since you have loaded, whether it's you or your client, and you know what, if it's your client, you shouldn't be getting information like this anyway, and then trying to apply it to your clients, but that's another story in and of itself. So I'm just going to address it as it's you, the competitor. So you've loaded, you've got plenty of carbs, and you've gotten full. It's not like you didn't fill out. But then you've started to flatten out as you've gotten into your water manipulation or whatever you've done, and it's later in the week. You haven't depleted glycogen because you haven't been weight training or doing cardio, or you shouldn't be anyway. You shouldn't be fucking a lot. I mean, you should be laying around basically trying to remain full and resting. So if you've been doing that, you have no reason for your glycogen to be depleted. So it has to be a water or sodium issue at that point if you're not full. So adding in carbs would be disastrous because basically you would fill. And even without increasing water, you're probably going to spill at some point. There's another misconception where people say, well, if you're not taking in fluids, then there's no way you can spill. That is probably the dumbest, at the risk of not sounding very politically correct, just retarded thing that that shouldn't even ever be thought, let alone said. You can spill without taking in fluid. It'll happen. So at that point, typically it's difficult or more difficult to start to fill out because you think, oh, you just add water. Well, you can add water and that probably will help. You have to add it in increments and you have to watch your vascularity, because if you start to increase vascularity, then you're starting to fill out. That's the married relationship or the married connection. If you're adding in water and you're not getting vascular or you're not seeing that increase, you're probably not filling out much. You're not going to fill out without increasing your vascularity. So then you have to look at it and go, okay, then do I need to add in sodium? Do I need to add in some carbs? Because adding sodium and water by itself could potentially not do fucking anything. Okay. Carbs, you could add in some carbs, but you got to be careful because there's going to come a point where you could spill because you're already full. You were relatively full as far as how many carbs you were taking in only 3 or 4 days prior. That's why a lot of times people will load. And I'm not giving it away because I'm not talking about it in detail. I'm pretty transparent with the shit that I do and the information I put out there. But I'm getting kind of tired of putting everything out there. And then I just have 25 messages every week about people wanting to know shit instead of hire me. It is a business after all.
Sure.
I mean, really, it is. It's a business. And sometimes it's off-putting when I see the same person. And this is what they'll do. And I don't want to bash them.
But hey, before you get into that, I got to go.
All right, take it easy.
So, yeah.
So I'll get people asking me.
Because I had a prior engagement.
I'll have people asking
good
me
to have
20
you, man.
Different questions over there.
See y'all.
He doesn't know how to hang up, does he? He's going to be here with us for the rest of the show.
I don't know.
I'll figure this out.
He doesn't know how to do it. I'm not going to tell him. Don't tell him. Oh, he's gone.
He just unplugged the computer.
I think so.
But what happens is I'll get, you know, somebody will ask me 15, 20 questions over the course of a couple months. And they always end it after a couple questions with, you know, I'm can't wait to hire you. You know, I'm saving up my money. No, you're not. You're going to milk it for everything you can milk it for. And until I shut you down and don't answer your questions, then maybe you'll consider it. It really, when it comes to the filling out, like I said, you got to know, or not just filling out, but the morning show, you got to know what the program or what the protocol is to that point, because you have to know what the things are that you have to look at. So if you're going to start adding things back in and, you know, light carbs and that sort of thing, it can be disastrous because you're already taking in enough carbs at that point. Adding in water by itself, it's a difficult, it can be difficult as well, but you should start to fill out from adding water back in if you're just flat from not having enough fluid. And knowing the difference really between those two things will probably cover 75% of the issues that you would run into on the morning of a show. They're going to be related to either carbs, which isn't very common because at that point you've already carbed up or had enough carbs. It's probably going to be fluid and adding water back in. And people are so scared when they start to add water back in, like, yeah, oh my God, you know, and for good reason. I mean, once the floodgates open, good luck trying to fix it because it, but it typically, if you're so flat that you are saying, hey, I'm flat.
Yeah.
That's a substantial amount of water. So, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 ounces of water is not going to spill you at that time.
No.
The other thing that I don't want to forget to mention is, and this is what I was talking about getting into my protocols and anything else. There is something I'm doing now where I don't tend to fill and spin. I've been doing this all year now that I've gotten back into more prep work starting this year or earlier this year, but I would say 80% of the time I don't use the fill and spill like I used to. The load earlier in the week, I load late in the week.
Yeah, that's what you were saying this in the last episode. You got a lot of people's interest with this.
It's really been very, it's not always 100%, but it's very predictable and very consistent. And what it allows for is it's a couple things, but you end up basically moving water, manipulating water first, and then loading and adding water to the load so that and the load may be either the morning of the show, which I typically don't like because I don't like a lot of food in a competitor the morning of the show if they don't have to, because the less food in you, obviously, the smaller your midsection really will be, and that's a huge bonus. So typically the loading is on the day before a show, but point is that gets you around. I think it gets you around a lot of these types of issues when it comes to what to do the morning of the show. Sure. At that point, you've still got carbs. You know you don't need carbs.
Yeah.
Or it's very unlikely that you need carbs. So it just becomes a water game at that point. Do I need more water? And adding water back in can change your physique in as little as 10 to 15 minutes. So it's nice. Like, here's an example. You get up on the morning of a show, you've got 6 hours, and you say, oh my God, I'm flat from not having enough fluid. Holy fucking shit. And then you start drinking fluid.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. You could well peak at 8:30, which is only going to be 2.5 hours. And then you got to try to ride that condition for the next 4 hours to get on stage. If you know it's a water issue, put it off until it's closer. I go on stage last 2 or 3 hours before you start adding the water back. It's not like you can't add water back in, but don't try to make dramatic changes by adding a lot of water in and making this like, oh shit, I got to get this change, because adding water back in can make those changes very, very quickly.
Yeah. That's a good point, so man.
It's rushing it, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to make.
That's a good point. You know what? We have a bunch more questions here. I'll hold off on them for now since we don't have Scott anymore. He's ending the party here. You know, there is one I would like to get to though, because we talked a little bit about this before the program. So it was one of our listeners, Anne-Marie. She didn't post it in our thread, but it's a training question. She said, "Not sure what show to direct this to. I thought it'd be good to talk about here with you though." She says, not long ago, I saw a video of a gym owner doing cable rows differently than I have been accustomed to. Instead of keeping his body relatively upright, he stretched all the way forward, rounding his back and bringing his hands closer to the weight stack. The man is someone who has been training for a long time and I really respect, but I have never seen anyone do this before. Opinions? I've got some of my own thoughts on this one. We briefly just touched on it, but you're not a fan. I am a fan personally, but you're not. So let's hash this one out real quick. What's your thought?
I will preface my response with this. I have a shitty back.
Okay.
Primarily due to clavicle width and scapula, range of motion is limited, shit like that. But nonetheless, it doesn't really matter. I've had a shitty back for a very long time. It's been a weakness for a very long time.
Yeah.
What that has done is it has made me I have to focus so much more on being as efficient as I can, not only with the exercises that I choose, but with the way that I'm doing the exercises to maximize my shitty back development. So I tend to think that I paid more attention, or had to pay more attention, to back training and back exercises, range of motion and shit like that, than most people do in that area. Now, okay, it doesn't mean that I'm right, and this is really, really important. I'm giving my opinion based on my experience. So I'm not going to say, and I told you before the show started, that I was concerned, because there are some people that I have a lot of respect for who believe in doing this, and I do not believe that it's right. I do not think that the back should round. And I've got, you know, I've got my chiropractor training buddy and people that I've checked with who back that up completely from a biomechanics, that is not a good way to do. But you know, when it comes to being, you know, I understand why they're doing it, but I think they're getting away with it more than it's actually being really effective. Again, that's just my opinion. It should not round. It reminds me of the old school way to do long, because Arnold used to do them very similarly.
He did, didn't he?
He would stretch. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, no one's going to argue that, you know, Arnold doesn't have a good back or doesn't have development. So then the question becomes, how much did it play into it? Or was it detrimental from a biomechanics standpoint? Yeah. And, you know, it's not supposed to be mechanically correct, because there shouldn't be that rounding of the back, and there shouldn't be that type of stretching with the disc and the erectors. It's kind of like saying, okay, well, if that's the case, then why not deadlift or stiff leg deadlift that way, or do barbell rows that way? It's because there's obviously more, I would think, more of a load, so it'd be more dangerous. Well, just because there's not as much of a load doesn't really mean that it's all of a sudden, to me, my thinking, that it's all of a sudden a good idea. I just don't. Does it stretch the scapula? Does it? Absolutely, it can. But you can also get this essentially the same thing by doing, say, you know, a hammer pull that is, and you'd have to understand the angle that I'm talking, but you know how they have the combination lat or combination row lat pull that's up and out in front of you, those types of exercises that could open up the scapula, kind of
pull you up like that.
Sure. And there's something to be said about having the abs contracted and the hips pulled anterior while you're trying to stretch out the scapula. I'm not trying to say that that's not a good idea. I just think that is a really vulnerable position for the lower back I just think it's a hard. I honestly, having all the problems that I've had with my lower, I just think it's a really bad idea.
I like the way you put it, because I think you make a really good point. You said you think it's something that people can get away with versus, you know, why don't we do it with a barbell row? You know, you make a good point. The load that I would hold with a barbell row would be greater. And I'm going to use the words you used. I couldn't get away with it. You know, if I'm going to barbell row a heavy load, then it's not something where I'm going to be rounding my back in the process. I'm going to be doing everything I can to keep it tight. But, you know, something like a seated cable row like that. Also, you know what? It's a good chance I'm going to use it toward later in the workout. It's not going to be like the first exercise that I pick. So I feel like a lot of times if I were to do a movement like that, it's been like later in the workout. I'm getting that additional stretch. Do I think that it's made a difference in my back development? I don't think so. And for the guy who's in the video, he's got a great back. I don't think that's the secret. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's been the key, because he's been able to do that movement that he's grown the back that he has. You know, I definitely don't think that's the case at all. You know where I've used that is Meadows will do it. Like you said, there's a lot of people that you respect. And he has an exercise that I've done where you do one rep strict, keeping your back tight, and then one rep with a stretch. So you pull it back. And then you do a second one, and then you lean forward and you pull it back and you do a second one. I remember doing those a couple years ago, and I believe it was Meadows that came up with that. And I mean, it was different. You know what I mean? It was different. I felt like I felt like I was getting a lower back, almost like a, almost like you would from a, like a rack pull with that lean, you know, when you do that thing.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I don't think that you need it by any means. And furthermore, if it, I could see, like, I remember, you know what, Shelby was doing this exercise once where he had like a slightly rounded back, and he told me too, he was like, I never tell clients to do this exercise. He said, because I can never explain it well enough through an email that it's just better off leaving it alone. Because when you have your back in that position, you know, you're going to be more likely to be in an injured position. And like you said, right, you know, if it hasn't worked for you, if it's hurt you, then obviously for people like yourself and people, there's probably a lot of other people out there in your situation, it probably is a bad exercise for them too. So I could see across the board, in that case, would I recommend it? Probably not as a general, like everybody should barbell row if they can, you know, everybody should dumbbell row if they can, everybody should bend their back, you know, forward like that. No, I don't think you have to, you know, I don't think it's going to make or break anything.
And I think too, you know, when you make the point that, yeah, it probably hasn't, you know, changed or made me grow or changed the look of my back, there is one thing that I will agree with, or one argument I would agree with for that movement. Hmm. And that would be this. If the movement is light enough that it doesn't put your back in a vulnerable position, your lower back in a vulnerable position for injury.
Yeah.
And what it is actually doing is allowing, like, let's just say you're opening with it, or you're almost warming up with it, to kind of activate and make sure that the left and the right side and all the small muscles around the scapula, including your lats, pterus major, minor, rhomboids, everything is activated and everything is pulling evenly. Because some people have a hard time activating left to right, or they may have like a, it's what I call, and I'm sure that there's a different term for it, a more correct term, but almost kind of a collapsed shoulder or a collapsed lat, where they have a hard time engaging or getting that side to activate. Something like that could probably be very, or could be beneficial or helpful. Mm. But from a growth standpoint, that's how I was given my opinion, because I, you know, Meadows is a good example. I'd use Dusty Hanshaw even. Okay. Dusty's back is not big because of any movement that is not retardedly heavy. I mean, that guy has grown from, you know, 400-pound barbell rows and rack chins and shit like that. So, and I think you gave it away in your answer, in the sense that, you know, if you have all these heavy movements and it's not a heavy movement, and you have to lighten up for that reason, I always have questions about those types of exercises anyway, because what kind of growth and what kind of a stimulus really is that in the big picture?
Yeah.
From a growth standpoint, it's literally probably doing nothing. That could be the same as, say, a concentration curl, or it could be the same as just doing something that just isn't very intense. It really wouldn't matter what the exercise is. If it's not intense, it's not going to induce any type of adaptation, because you're not providing a stimulus that the muscle has to adapt to. So
that's a good point. Yeah. I think so, man. Yeah. Not going to make or break you. I don't think the guy, and by the way, this guy in the video, I've met him before. He's a really nice guy.
I heard that, actually. I heard you guys, you have a history.
I was told, actually, that he was like one of the worst human beings on the face of the earth. But I think I was misinformed.
Sometimes you have to really question your sources.
Yes. This is true.
Or the motive of those, I suppose.
This is true, too. And sometimes you just need to not think about it, because sometimes there's no reasoning with crazy.
Exactly.
Hey, before we go, somebody asked, you know, while you're in Michigan, What were your, I don't know, maybe this guy's traveling, but what were your favorite places to eat? You have any restaurant tips for anybody traveling beautiful Michigan, which it is beautiful this time of year. We've got beautiful fall colors, over 50 different deciduous trees, making for a fireworks show in the woods. How do you like that?
Yeah, that's not too bad. I'll tell you what, I grew up in Michigan, so I am impressed with their fall, but I did spend 21 years at 9,000 feet, and I got to tell you, the color is fucking insane in Colorado, so I'm a little partial to that. But it was beautiful. It was also very comfortable in the 70s. It smells very nice.
It was like 30 this morning, by the way.
Oh God, I'm sorry for that.
It changed real quick.
But it was chilly here at 78. So I mean, you know, we all deal with it in a relative from a relative standpoint. No, you know, if he's from the Southwest Michigan area, because I obviously I don't know anything outside of Battle Creek, Kalamazoo, you know, the smaller towns over there, because I haven't lived there in so long and I don't get out, you know, to the Detroit area or the Grand Rapids area. But you know, when it comes to breakfast, I always say there's two of them now in Kalamazoo. It's called Breakfast at Tiffany's. And they have a here's the thing. I'm a sweets guy. So when it comes to French toast and pancakes, you gotta be knocking it out of the park for me.
Yeah.
Their egg and meat dishes are above average, but they're not like snooze. They're not like, oh my fucking God, this is insane. They're good. But you have to go there. If you go to Breakfast at Tiffany's, you have to get the Java infused toffee French toast. And if you don't like it, I will pay for it.
Holy shit.
And I'm serious. It's so fucking good that it's just off the hook. It's just it's really good for their sweet stuff. When it comes to burgers, and this is kind of, you have to go all the way to Allegan. It's kind of
that's a drive, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of between Kalamazoo and, let's put it this way. If you're ever headed over to Lake Michigan and you happen to be going up M89 or 43 or something like that, maybe not 43, 43 is out of Kalamazoo. I'm thinking of maybe it's an M78. But anyway, out of either Fenville or Allegan, you have to stop at a place called Corky's Drive-In.
Corky's Drive-In, huh?
They put that burger in that wax paper, and within 3 minutes, it's soaked through.
Really?
Like the fucking grease is soaked through from that. It's not a gourmet, but it's just your old school diner drive-in, but it is fucking off the hook. It is so good and so cheap. And they have like I call them white trash drive-in foods, like deep fried mushrooms. And they're good ones. Ooh, like it's legit. Good shit. You know, and they have an olive burger. Who has an olive burger anymore? You know, shit like that.
So. I'm looking at the site, man. I'm looking at like what the burgers look like. I'm going to zoom in here on the menu. Oh yeah, they got tater tots. They got cauliflower. They do chili dogs. Do you guys do chili dogs in Florida, or is that just a Michigan thing?
I think it's more of a Midwest thing. I'm sure they have them down here, but chili dogs or chili cheese dogs, man, that's I think that was more of a Midwest Michigan thing.
I thought so. Oh yeah, I see the mushroom burger, olive burger. Are you an olive burger kind of guy?
You know, I'll eat one. I won't seek one out, but I'll eat one because I think it's a Michigan thing.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I had olive burgers at the, you know, Ritzy or the wherever I worked when I was in high school and shit like that. When I go back to, I don't see an olive burger unless I go back to Michigan.
Huh. And this is, I see,
so
the,
if I come across,
yeah, I'm looking now at the pictures. It is the drive. And when you say drive in, you park and then you can order there from your car and they'll bring a tray out to you, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same thing. It's not like Sonic. It's not like a modern. It's old school.
No, yeah.
And the only other one I would say, too, or the other one that makes me think of old school, too, is that we have still have an A&W drive-in in Bellevue, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And A&W, I don't know if anybody knows their onion rings, but they're the ones where if you bite into it and then you keep your teeth clenched, you can slide the onion out of the remaining. That's the old school A&W onion ring, and it's so freaking good. So that drive-in too, and of course they have root beer floats. Corky's may have root beer floats too, but A&W,
yeah,
root beer floats are just the shit. Now, again, when it gets into like the gourmet high-end burgers and stuff in Michigan, I don't know, because I just don't. I don't get to spend when I'm there. I always laugh and say, and it's a laugh, not because it's ha ha, but an attempt at levity. We're only usually back in Michigan. I mean, you know this, Scott, shit, from the times I hit you up. We're only usually back there when it's something negative. It's either someone has died or health related where they're not doing well. So I would really love to go back just for fun. And we might go back for Christmas. So that would be cool if we do, and get all the kids there from Colorado and Wisconsin, but that's still up in the air. The point is when I go back, it's usually not a very positive situation, and I'm either training and have my food with me, or I'm just scrambling for whatever's close because I'm at a hospital or I have to, you know, do something that is, you know, a funeral or something. And it just doesn't matter what I eat. I just grab what I can grab.
Well, next time, let's see. You got to make a trip then. We make it a positive thing. Or I plan on, I got to come down there because I got to see you. I got to see Scott Stevenson. And I got some clients that live in Florida. It would be a good trip to make. So Scott already invited us too. He told us he has a second home that we can stay in. So I'll have to take him up on that. But what do you say we get out of here, man? We left S2H in the dust long ago. We have some more questions, but we can save those for the next round.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. For another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill and S2H, go to teamskip.com and, of course, check out the Intense Muscle Board. And once again, this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our codes are advices. Guys, we will see you next time. King of my jungle, just a gangster stalking, living life like a firecracker, quick as my fuse. Vendetta's a death, that's the colors I choose. Red or blue, cuz of blood, it just don't matter. Sucker died for your life when my shotgun scatters. Colors. The gangs of LA will never die. Just multiply colors. Colors, 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 colors. You don't know me, fool. You disown me? Cool. I don't need your assistance. Social persistence. Any problem I got, I just put my fist in. Color. My life is violent, but violent is life. Peace is a dream, reality is a night. My color is my honor. My Advices Radio Network.